Hey everyone, welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I'm your host, Ronak. And in today's episode, let's talk a little bit about the US debt levels and where we're going and how we should be thinking about the more macro investing world for a second. So in the news, we're about to start talking about the debt ceiling quite a bit. This is where Congress sets a limit of how much money the US government can spend and how much they can be in debt, and theoretically saying that they're not going to spend any more and possibly default on some of their debts. I think this is a little bit more hand-waving, a lot more drama than actual substance, but let's get into some of the more macro, if you will. Right now, the government has something around $31.7 trillion in debt. This $31.7 trillion is how much the US government owes. They owe any sort of bondholder, so that could be their own citizens, it could be other governments around the world, it could be a whole bunch of different folks. And when you think about how much the US government spends on everything from war and defense to Social Security to Medicare and Medicaid to interest payments on the debt itself, right? Like, the government is continuously spending more and more money, and this country is just going into greater and greater debt. And it seems a little bit terrifying. I think that there's a lot of fear-mongering that's going on out there. So I want to start off by making the argument for why the fear-mongering might make sense, but I want to spend at least the second half of this episode on saying why the fear-mongering doesn't make sense, right? I think it's important to understand both sides of an argument versus just blindly listening to one side and believing everything that they say. So again, $31.7 trillion in debt is a ton of money. We're also starting to see some banks go under and collapse. So is it really insane to think that the government is going to have to step in and print even more money like they did in 2008 and like they did in 20, where they're just printing so much massive amounts of money where the US dollar just gets completely demolished? Governments around the world stop accepting the US dollar as the reserve currency of the world, and we're staring at the end of the American empire. If you think about it for a second, the Roman Empire did collapse. The British Empire did collapse. We've seen booms and busts where entire empires and hegemons go from world rulers to substantially not world rulers. So what's to say that the US is going to stay in control forever? It won't. So are we at that moment right now where things are about to just completely collapse around us? And is this $31.7 trillion really the canary in the coal mine that's setting us up for a lot of pain going forward, right? The government's fourth largest expense is simply interest rate payments that they're making on the debt that they already have, let alone every other thing that the government is supposed to be supporting. So as interest rates go up, those payments that the government is going to be making are going to be increasing and increasing over time. Is it all that insane to think that taxes are going up? If you think you're already paying a lot in taxes, wait to see what happens over the next 5 to 10 years. That can definitely go up even further from here. And again, today, a lot of people hold government bonds. Individuals, different countries, whether you're Japan or China or whatever is the country, you probably do hold a lot of US government bonds because they're seen as very safe and secure. The US government has always paid back their loans. There's very little risk there. And they're starting to pay 4 or 5% interest. Hey, that seems like a nice way to get some guaranteed income. But again, if the government is going to have to print a ton more money, then each incremental dollar that you have becomes worth less and less over time. We see this just going to the grocery store. You try buying a gallon of milk today versus 10 years ago, and you're paying way more, right? That milk didn't change. There's no extra calcium in the milk. There's no extra protein in the milk. What changed is that there's more dollars in the world. So that way, each incremental dollar is worth less and less over time. So whatever you have in savings, it's just going to get inflated away over time. Think about it. If you're a physician, you're working over the course of your career, and you get lucky enough to save up $1 million and hand that down to your children, that $1 million gets handed down to their children, and so on and so forth. And eventually, we're living in a world where $1 million can only buy you a sandwich. Right? You're working your entire career, you're saving up a ton of money, and all your great-grandchildren are going to get is a sandwich out of it, right? Plus, we're starting to see with this Ukraine-Russia war that the US government is using the US dollar as a weapon. They're deflating things. They are putting sanctions on other countries. They're, by having the US dollar be the reserve currency of the world, there's a lot of power that the US government has. And maybe some countries are starting to get upset and don't want to price everything in US dollars. Maybe eventually Saudi Arabia is going to be selling their oil priced in gold or Bitcoin or Japanese yen or Indian rupees or some other currency other than the US because they're just fed up with this unfortunate tax that they're having to pay. If you think about all the currency in the world, something like 20% of it is in US dollars, while 80% of it is in all these other currencies, again, like the yen or the euro or whatever it is. But if you look at all transactions, it's something like 80% is in US dollars because it is the reserve currency of the world. I think as China and other countries get more and more ambitious in their position in the global stage, they're going to want to dethrone the US dollar from the reserve currency of the world and have their own currencies take over. So is it all that insane to think that China and India and Russia and Brazil and a bunch of these other countries are going to start getting together to try to scheme and break the US dollar as the US reserve currency? No. And the best way to hedge against that is maybe buying a whole bunch of gold or Bitcoin, items that are scarce and outside of the system, if you will. There's a lot of fear mongering going on right now saying that, again, the government is going to have to print a huge amount of money. These banks are going to continuously fail. We're looking at the end of the American empire. So why not go buy a bunch of gold, a bunch of Bitcoin, a bunch of guns, maybe a bunker to hide out in, maybe some butter and oil and store that for the next 50 years as you ride this out to try to see what the next global empire ends up being and then somehow try to latch onto them or just living this more independent off-the-grid life. That's all fine and people can do that. I do think that there is some value in being a little bit skeptical of the system and how fragile it is. But let me take the other side of that argument. I actually think that this country is in a pretty good state right now. And I'm actually pretty optimistic about the future. And everybody can make their own arguments. Everybody can set them and their families up for however they want to. I just tried to make the doom and gloom argument as best as I could. And there's lots of articles, videos being put out about this where just escape from the system and go into all of these other type of assets because essentially the American empire is coming to an end and it's going to start off with the US dollar no longer being the reserve currency of the world. And in order to protect you and your family's wealth, go into things like gold and Bitcoin, and that's all great. That's all fine. People want to do that. Great, go for it. There's nobody stopping you. Maybe that ends up being the right decision. Maybe that ends up being a great way to preserve your wealth. In fact, I can tell you that, again, like there have been other countries and empires that have crashed in history, right? Almost every currency has deflated themselves down to zero that was not backed by gold or any sort of other hard asset. My family were from India, and if you rewind back to the mid-1900s, when the British left India, they went through what was called partition, where India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh basically split into three separate countries. There was lots of wars going on and lots of violence and death between the Hindu and Muslim fighting. And there were a lot of people that were basically kicked out of one side of the country and told to move to the other side. And you're not allowed to take anything with you other than what you can carry in your own two hands. So if somebody invested a whole bunch in something like real estate and they were being kicked out of the country, too bad. You have 24 hours to pack up and just leave. You can't sell all of your assets that you've put together. So there were definitely people that just lost everything. They lost everything, all of their life savings, everything that their family tried to work hard for and put together, instantly lost. I think we saw a lot of that during World War II and what was going on with the Nazis. And this stuff happens, right? I hate to say this, but this is a sad world in a lot of ways where there's a lot of unfortunate events. And maybe not protecting your wealth is the most top of mind thing, but it's at least something to think about a little bit. There is at least some rationale for the fear mongering of saying, ditch the current global system and get into these offline assets like gold. But again, let's take a look at the other side of this argument for a second. So this all stems from that $31.7 trillion number that the government is in debt, and that is scary. But if we start putting a little bit of context around this too, right? Our country's GDP is around $26 to $27 trillion. So our debt to GDP ratio is around 120%. Now, that could be a little bit high. That could be thought of as not great. But there are a lot of countries that have ratios that are even worse than 120%. And there are some that are below 120%. And a few of those countries, for Japan as an example, there are, I think, close to 300%. And they're still a functioning economy. They're still a functioning country. They're not in riot mode. I don't think there is any magic number of this percentage of debt to GDP is when everything starts breaking, and below that, everything is just fine. It's not known what is too far and what's not. But the US is a very middle of the road debt to GDP ratio, where I don't think that where we're at today is a huge concern. Now, this country can also increase taxes on its citizens to try to make up for that debt and start paying it down. We've seen a world where the highest tax bracket, their income taxes are close to 90%. We've seen that in this country's history. That can happen again, right? So today, I think the IRS highest tax bracket is around 40%. So could that tick up to 50, 60% over the next couple of years? Yeah, potentially. And that'll at least... they could use that to pay down their debt and their interest payments and make things a little bit more manageable. That's definitely possible. The second thing is, again, the US government has the ability to print money. We're no longer tied to the gold standard, right? Back before 1971, for every dollar that's out there in circulation, they essentially had to have that much gold in equivalent in Fort Knox. We got off the gold standard. Nobody really knows how much gold is in Fort Knox. So theoretically, the government can print as much money as it wants to. Yeah, that might lead to a little bit of inflation, but you can basically inflate the debt away, right? As long as people are still willing to buy US government bonds, what's stopping the government from just raising more capital that way as well, right? So I don't think we're anywhere near a place where people are going to start rejecting buying government T-bills, because this is still one of the strongest currencies in the world, still is one of the strongest economies in the world, and it is a very safe place to put your money. Add on top of it, we on this podcast, we've been talking a lot about AI, right? ChatGPT and everything that's going on there. And as we've seen in history over the past few decades, that efficiency is really growing at a fast clip. If you think about the past, we did not have computers, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have word processors and things like that. So work was just much less efficient. If we think about the future over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, we're going to be getting more and more technology where the average employee is getting more and more efficient. They can do more interesting things. And what that's going to lead to is our GDP growing at a faster clip. Right? So yeah, our GDP right now is $26 trillion, but who's to say that's not going to grow to $100 trillion in a couple of decades, and maybe our debt levels are not going to grow that high as well, right? So we might actually be innovating ourselves into a place where we're in a good financial place. You add on top of it, a lot of people also talk about entitlement spending and how that's like ruining the country. Every politician wants to promise everything to their citizens, and no politician is ever going to cut spending because that's how you lose votes. But if you think about it for a second, like the people that get most of the entitlements from Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, things like that, tend to be folks that are older, people that are retired, no longer have a job, and are just needing a little bit more medical attention and things like that. Now, when you look at the average age of the United States, it's actually middle of the road. When you look at a country like India, their average age is actually much lower than the average age in the US. And if you look at a country like Japan, the average age is actually much higher. Now, it is very beneficial when you have a younger population, a population that is going to work, doing a job, being productive for society, and having a smaller population, being retired and basically taking resources from the government to live their lives. That's an ideal situation to be in, but naturally, we're seeing these numbers fluctuate over time, right? There's always people that are unfortunately passing away and fortunately people that are being born. So the average age of the country is definitely going to be changing as the next decades go by. When you think about 2020 and COVID and everything that happened there, we know that a lot of people were stuck at home and a huge amount of babies were created. People didn't have too much to do at home other than reproduce. So all of the babies that have been born over the last few years, what's going to happen over the next 20 years, as all this AI starts advancing and these babies become of working age, their level of productivity is going to be off the charts. So when you have that many people going to work with advanced tools that we can't even think of and dream of today, who knows how fast our GDP is going to be growing and how booming our economy could possibly be. The average age of the country might start dropping at some point, right? As people start aging and, again, unfortunately, start passing away, right? If we do have a large percentage of the population that is already above 70, 80, 90 years old, right? It's not insane to think that people are going to, again, start passing away. And if we're having more and more births or more and more immigration take off over the next 10 years, we might get more people working hard, helping our companies, helping our economy grow over time. So I don't think that the fear-mongering is factoring in growth, innovation, youth, and what just optimism in general. And this reminds me of a quote that I heard recently where optimists typically sound like salespeople and pessimists typically sound like well-researched, intelligent people. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not, I don't really know. But my point in this episode is really to take a step back, look at the macro. There's a lot of people yelling about this thing being wrong with the world or that thing being wrong with the world. And maybe that's true, but historically, this country has done quite well. We've had debt to GDP ratios that are way worse than 120% in this country. If you think back to World War II, the government was just like spending left and right on like everything from NASA to building of the nuclear bomb and all the war efforts and things like that. You also had the New Deal going on and the government entitlement programs were just taking off like a rocket ship. But what's also happened over the last few decades, the internet was created, GPS was created, computers are in our lives now, we have planes, we have cars, right? We're able to be more efficient, we're able to grow at a fast clip, right? I do think that there is some value of being a part of society, and this government, this country has done a great job of creating GDP growth. If you take a look at one person's lifetime, if you take an 80-year-old, the average GDP per capita in this country is something like $60,000 today. And if you look at when that 80-year-old was first born, it was something close to $10,000, right? So over one person's lifetime, the GDP per capita of the country has increased by around 6x. So who knows what that's going to look like over the next 80 years? Maybe we're going to see a 10x, right? Everybody says that AI and a lot of these other new technologies are growing at exponential clips. And if that's the case, then, you know, participating in society, buying investments that are more like real estate or stocks or more innovative, cool things might actually turn out to be a lot more productive than something like a gold and a Bitcoin, where, yeah, it is a hedge against the dollar being deflated away, but you're also hedging against innovation and growth and good things and optimistic things happening to the world and to this country. So allocating a little bit of one's portfolio might make sense if you are worried about where this country and where this world is going. It's always fair to make that argument and have a balanced portfolio, whatever a balanced portfolio means to you. I would recommend folks reading Ray Dalio's new book called The Changing World Order, and we'll leave a link to that book in the show notes. But that's an interesting book where it talks about how countries have risen and fallen throughout history and why maybe the U.S. is entering that brink point where maybe there might be a collapse coming sometime in our lifetime, maybe not. But I personally like to err on the side of optimism. I've seen so much innovation happen in this world over my lifetime alone. I can't wait to see what happens over the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. What are the cool new things that are going to be invented, the new business models that are going to be out there, the new gadgets that we're going to be playing with? Just in the last couple months, ChatGPT came out and that's like blowing people's minds, right? Like I barely even write emails anymore. I just have ChatGPT script my emails for me, right? Who knows what the world is going to look like 15 years from now? I'd rather bet on optimism than pessimism. I like the idea of dreaming about the future and thinking about us getting to a place where we're like Star Wars, Star Trek, and all these cool gadgets and exploring the planets and just who knows what we're going to do. So my main message to you in this episode is I wouldn't be surprised if going forward, we're going to see more and more fear mongering go on. as our debt levels increase, as the debt ceiling comes into the lexicon in terms of the main news headlines, you're going to see maybe more inflation happening, maybe more banks going down and people saying this is the end of times and it's all over. Remember the good old days of America? We don't have anything left. We don't do anything positive anymore. And again, maybe that's true. Maybe that's the right, maybe those investments to hedge against optimism like Bitcoin and gold is the right thing to do. And if that's what you believe, go for it. I want you and everybody listening to this podcast to take your own financial future into your own hands and do what you think is best. But I would just encourage you to pause and just think about what an optimistic outcome for the world could look like. And think about like how you want to participate, assuming innovation does continue and does keep making life better and better for people, where life expectancy continues to rise, we're able to clean up our environment and our atmosphere, where we are able to build the technology to go to Mars or Jupiter and other planets, and we end up having some really cool and exciting tools and technology out there. Just pause for a moment and try to be a little bit optimistic about the next 50 years. Dream a little bit about like where the world could go in a positive way, right? And then if you are overly optimistic, I would also encourage you to pause and think about what could go wrong in the world. Be a little bit pessimistic also. Strike that right balance for whatever you think is right in terms of optimism and pessimism. So I'll leave everything here. If anybody does want to reach out to just chat a little bit more about debt, gold, Bitcoin, inflation, all these topics, feel free to reach out to me at ronak@physicians.vc. Always happy to engage with our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.